Hi, and welcome to Only Fools and Brotherly Forces, Series 3, Episode 3, Friday the 14th. My name is Bobby, and I'm here with my brother, Jamie, as always. Good evening, Jamie.
Good evening, Bob, mate. How is everything going?
Very well, very well. Looking forward to this very infamous episode.
Yeah, as I said on the end of the last episode, it's one that kind of escapes my memory quite a lot. It was really interesting watching it again. There was definitely a different feel to it. It was shot very different. It was very dark and dingy, and you know, they play for a bit of fear. This was a really, really different sort of curveball to a lot of the other episodes.
Yeah, the atmosphere just felt different, didn't it, the whole way through? But it had some really clever touches. Actually, the first thing I wanted to talk about was the fact that it was a bit weird. This aired on November the 24th, because it had a full Halloween feel about it, obviously. That was what they were going for.
I hadn't thought about that.
And I wondered, maybe it aired on Halloween or really close to Halloween. But it wasn't. It was kind of close-ish, but not really as close as it could have been. And I don't really see why they couldn't have reordered the episodes, because it could have been really close to Halloween. I thought that might have worked even better, because that there's a lot of classic horror thriller cliches going on.
Yeah, maybe it's almost like too forced to do that. I don't know. But was Halloween even massive back then? Were people really celebrating it even close to what they are now, which is not very much?
Yeah, no, that's very true. If it was made now, this would definitely be a Halloween episode. I bet Gold show this on Halloween all the time. And if they're not, they should be.
Definitely. Well, with that, I think it is definitely time to get into the episode. So, Series 3, Episode 3, Friday the 14th. Let's do it. Stick a bunny in
me pocket. I'll fetch the suitcase from the bank. So, as always, we start with Del popping into the flat and taking over the room, but this time it's a bit more aggressive in his takeover. He literally captures Rodney in a fishing net.
Yeah. He then slaps down some maggots on the table whilst Rodney's dishing out his, well, I guess Chinese, I think it looks like.
There you are.
Ow, you dirty pig! Get it away!
I'm not very squeamish, but I think actually someone putting maggots in front of me while eating rice would make me feel a bit weird.
Just eating anything. If I was eating a roast dinner and someone put them that close to me, I'm not squeamish at all. And, you know, I always think about the I'm a celebrity stuff. Like, I can eat maggots and I could eat stuff if I really had to, and I wouldn't be squeamish, but doesn't mean I'd welcome it as a side dish.
yeah, it's not what you want, is it, at all? But Del has gone full Captain Birdseye. He's in all the gear, the hat, the lot. And, he's ready to play dress-up, which I feel like is a thing that happens occasionally. Like, he suddenly has an opportunity to try something different and he goes, like, all in. And that's what he's doing here. He's got the boots, the lot.
He's a bit like your mate who like got really into golf and bought the gear and then played twice and then got really into ice hockey and got all the gear and then never carried on. Like, he has fads, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly. That is 100% what it is. He really just jumps in with both feet. It won't last. I mean, what a waste of money all this equipment is, but fair play, I bet he enjoys it.
So Dale was telling the guys that they are going for a little fishing trip down to Cornwall where Boyce has got a little cottage down there, a little holiday home, something along those lines. And very quickly, Rodney starts to put some of these pieces together and realises that Dell's found a new score.
Mario's is a fish restaurant.
Is it? Yeah, see you later.
Bit of a coincidence, Dell, isn't it? You meeting him in a fish restaurant, then the next thing we're all going fishing.
He's like Elliot Bleeding Ness at times, isn't he?
Dell quotes a guy called Elliot Ness. Do you know who Elliot Ness is?
Yeah, I looked him up, obviously.
This is kind of alluding to a few things within this episode and a couple of episodes. As we move on, I'm kind of feeling it a bit more. So many of the jokes, even though, you know, we're talking 30 years after they were done, I do wonder how much better known Elliot Ness was 30 years ago. So Elliot Ness, for those that don't know, was an American prohibition agent, and he was made famous for his efforts to bring down Al Capone and enforce some of the prohibition in Chicago. And he was the leader of a famous team of law enforcement agents that was sort of famously called the Untouchables. So I just don't know. Is that something that everyone... Is he his household name 30 years ago? Had he just... Had there been, like, films around that was quoting him? Or is it just... It was just a lot of Sullivan's jokes really niche. I kind of feel like a lot of them are quite niche.
I don't know. It's a pretty broad show for the most part. And a lot of these references do get a pretty big laugh in the audience. So I think you're right about the fact that these are people that are going to just be better known at the time. Which is odd, for obviously this is a very historical character. This is talking about 50 years earlier. 60 years even. But yeah, there's got to have been some reason he was more well known then. Because... I've certainly never heard of him, and I would have thought we were, you know, as historically knowledgeable as any normal person watching this show.
Yeah, I mean, I know a bit about the Prohibition, and I know I heard of the Untouchables and obviously Al Capone. But the laughter is so quick, it's like there's no delay in the thought from who Elliot Ness is. They're very punchy punchline jokes, as it were, or they're very quick jokes. So maybe it was just more of a popular culture thing. Just amusing, because not amusing as in funny, as in it is amusing.
Musing.
Yeah.
You've mused.
Yeah.
You say it's a little trip. I mean, it's a 5-hour drive from Peckham to Cornwall.
Was it 5 hours?
It's 5 hours. It's because Cornwall is a bloody mission. It is properly out of the way, and the transport links aren't exactly ideal. So you've really got to be committed if you're going to take that van for a 5-hour drive to Cornwall.
Oh, granddad's in the back for 5 hours as well.
In it, exactly. I mean, that must be, I don't know. It might be brilliant if there's not too much stuff and he can set himself up like a nice seat. He might have the best seat in the house. Whenever I think of things like this, I think of when we were kids, and obviously this is now, it's probably highly illegal then, but it's definitely highly illegal now, is I remember when we used to drive back from up north to visit our nan, our parents would put down the back seats and just turn the whole back of the car into a massive double bed, and we would just kip on the way home.
Well, that was wicked.
Amazing, wasn't it? What a way to travel.
I did that fairly recently when I was road tripping around in the US. I put the back down, someone else was driving, and just made a bed out of it, and we took it in turns. It was brilliant.
Fair play. But if he's got himself a system like set up like that, then he's going to be loving life.
But it's going to be full of fishing gear and nets and all sorts of stuff. He's having a nightmare.
The rods are on the rods are on the roof.
Yeah, that's not all your fishing gear, though, is it?
Nets on the roof. Mm. A few maggots in the glove box. Sound.
Anyway, Del's hoping to make about 300 quid, assuming that they managed to catch himself 60 salmon. And Rodgers, as always, is being his woke self, if you can call it that, and just basically shooting it down and just being his pessimistic, moaning self.
So we got permission, have we?
Well, we will have. We see the gamekeeper when we get down there and we pay him 25 quid.
What, and he gives us a fishing permit?
No, he shows us holding a fence.
He's got a free fishing trip, a little holiday down to Cornwall. Gonna make some money out of it, but obviously he's got a problem with it.
Yeah, just Rodney being Rodney, isn't it? But I have to think that this has to be Leonard's legendary line just here. It's an absolute fantastic little one-liner, that whole bait and switch.
Don't you worry, Jill, leave it to me.
Very nice. Very nice indeed.
It's called business.
It's called stealing.
No, it ain't, Rodney.
Listen to your granddad.
It's called poaching.
I think even Rodney's response to it is even better, because he says...
Del, he can't even poach an egg.
Really good. Nice couple of big hitters there, early. And yeah, as you said before, Rodney's got all the complaints. He's got no solutions. And as after Del's sort of said, well... You know, I'll split the money with Grandad. Rodney decides that he didn't say he wasn't going to go. He was just morally objecting and being an arse.
as is his way. We cut to a very short view of their road trip, while Rodney's kind of singing a little poaching song.
I'm poaching, boo, 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 boo. Left a sign up on the door. Gone poaching, boo, 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 boo.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that is a song. I don't think it is. I think he's just doing a whole blues thing.
I'm pretty sure that there's a song that's Gone Fishing that he's changed the lyrics to Gone Poaching on. I didn't go as far to look it up, but I'm pretty sure that exists.
Yeah, that works. That's quite clever. But in short order, they arrive in Cornwall, and it's absolutely chucking it down. It looks pretty rank. It is the full-on storms, which, again, I feel has come up a lot on our podcast. It certainly seems to be coming up a lot around my house. And they get pulled over by a copper.
On this scene, I do wonder how they get away with so much stuff, because they're just bumbling and obviously nervous. They could be going there to fish legally, and they could just play on that, but they're all just like, you know, coppers there, and they're not talking, they're out of it and being really guilty. And then Grandad has another great line.
Because you remember we said we might do a little bit of fishing.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, I might do, you know, just a little bit, like, you know, tiddlers.
No salmon though.
I think the problem is with that is the copper is just so distracted because he's got much bigger fish to fry, that yeah, he's just completely doesn't care about whatever. They could be going to some sort of mass murderous, you know, drug fueled rave, and he wouldn't care because he's got more important things to worry about.
Why did you start talking about a rave?
Because you were talking about how they're bumbling around illegal activities. Anyway,
Jesus,
that might get cut. But I really wanted to just take a moment to give this actor their due, the guy who plays the copper. I love this scene. I think he is absolutely quality. He's got the nice little regional accent, which he pulls off just right.
Is that supposed to be a West Country accent?
It's a bit of a weird West Country accent, isn't it?
I couldn't really place it.
It was a bit more Hampshire, wasn't it? Like, it was...
Yeah, it was old school Hampshire, maybe.
Yeah, old school, like farmer Hampshire. So it was a bit of an odd one, but it set the mood, just having that kind of like country accent. And I feel like he delivered everything with just enough like cliche pantomime fear and enough genuine building suspense. And I just thought he absolutely nailed it. It was just the perfect little cameo.
Yeah, it was great. So the policeman had informed them that there is an escaped maniac, or someone who's come from an insane asylum and is believed to be at large and dangerous, and that they should be wary and careful, and they need to call the police if they see anything suspicious. Dale winds his window up, and Rodney's, you know, all up for turning back and going home, as his granddad. And Dale's, you know, he's showing no fear. He's up for going ahead, and he wants to, you know, try and make that money that he's thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, that almost could have been like a dun-dun-dun at this point. It was that, like, that much. The scene is set for this mystery caper. sorry, I just got it carried away with my hand gestures. Because if you want, but you
don't ask questions, then brother, I'm your man. It's a shame we can't record the video of this and then release like a bloopers.
It's very good we don't do that.
So the next scene is at Boyce's holiday place. We get a really interesting shot here. Again, a first time I think we've seen this, which is a sort of first person shot of a heavily breathing guy who is watching on the trotters unload the van, which is, you know, a little bit eerie.
It's good. You almost don't know it's a first person shot the first time. They're cutting back and forth, and at first it looks like a long shot from the bushes, like it might be someone watching them, but that's unconfirmed. And then it goes, and then you hear the breathing, and then you see the hand. It's really good. Like, it's really good.
I think the direction on this episode in general was really good, considering there's obviously a lot of low light stuff as well. It's quite hard to shoot in low light, so they've done really well in it. But the funny thing is that I think it's probably good to mention it now, but I think throughout the whole episode from now on, it is played to be quite eerie. You know, there are some fairly scary and uncomfortable sort of shots, but the audience doesn't really go for it at any point. Everything that is kind of played for fear or scare or suspense, they just laugh it off, which was surprising. I was surprised how much laughter there was in spite of them doing a pretty good job about it.
Yeah, it's funny. I think like maybe the mood in studio may have been very different because I guess they didn't have all those outside shots. But yeah, it's like the second there's any joke, it's just full laughter and there's never really like an ooh and tension. But you feel like if you took out the jokes and the canned laughter, then it totally works as like a thriller type setup.
I think everyone just trusts enough that they know that nothing serious is going to happen, and it's always a comedy, and it's never going to go dark. So everyone's just always looking on the brighter side of it,
which is almost a shame, really, because I feel like they did everything they could to turn it up. I think it's perfectly written with the jumping between the jokes and the creepiness. But yeah, you're right. The audience never really let you go there because they're constantly absolutely cracking up, which is fair enough. There are a collection of fantastic lines just throughout all this creepiness.
So they go into the house and Rodney's talking about some movement he's seen in the trees. And the first thing he's trying to do is phone the police. And Dell's, you know, tell him that he's stupid because he hasn't seen anything yet. And he's talking about putting the kettle on, making a nice cup of tea, but he's too scared to go into the kitchen. And I don't know, he's just a wimp, isn't he? He's just useless.
Yeah, I mean, you know, bless him, he's scared, isn't he? Dell is the voice of reason throughout all this as well, of course, and Rodney and Grandad are like very jumpy, and you're meant to think they're genuinely scared, and Rodney and Dell Boy is playing, you know, playing hard and not worried and trying to just tell him to stop being stupid, basically.
So Dell decides to go into the kitchen and stick the saucepan on. It's quite dark in there, you can't see too much, just a bit of sort of silhouetting and some stuff from Dell's shoulder. And as he turns away, we get, you know, we've got storms going on this whole time, and a flash of lightning comes.
See what I mean? There ain't no ghosties or ghoulies here.
And we get a pretty good picture of this man whose face or his nose is pretty much up against the window. You know, he's balding and old, and he looks like he's breathing up. You know, it's a fairly intimidating little shot.
The intimidation's kind of blown by the roaring laughter from the crowd. yeah, it is. It looks great, and it's really nicely set up. And Dell even has this look in his eye of maybe feeling for a second like he's being watched. It's great.
We come back into the living room and Rodney pulls out an axe from the sideboard. And again, we're just sort of getting this panic, and the suspense is building and building, even though it doesn't really feel like it. It sort of feels like it should be getting a bit more serious. And Dale's just kind of batting it all away and, you know, just again, speaking words of sense and being the voice of reason. And no matter what anyone's saying, Grandad's just coming out with a line at basically the end of every bit of dialogue.
My favourite one of Dell Boy's has to be,
"Well, I shouldn't let it worry you, Grandad, because the three bears have probably eaten him by now."
It's a great one.
But his reasoning is completely sound. Like, a chopper being in the sideboard is completely irrelevant because he's obviously not left it there. But between them, they do seem to eventually agree that it would be absolutely mad for the guide to be wandering around here in the around the moors, and there's a chance he could be halfway to London by now.
Oh, he's most probably halfway to London by now.
Yeah, of course he is. He's most probably looking for an empty place up there.
Hope he don't find our flat.
Will you shut up?
We cut that off and we get a cross into a little game of Monopoly, a little family board game, all sat round, and Dale's obviously trying to cheat straight away.
I love the idea of the Trotters playing Monopoly, just as a little skit idea. I feel like this is something that I'm not sure what would have come first. The idea of, okay, they're in the cottage, what could they be doing? Playing Monopoly is quite funny. Or if somewhere in a back scrap of paper, somewhere John Sullivan's gone, the Trotters playing Monopoly must find a way to fit that into something somewhere, because it's just gold with their three characters.
Yeah, they're just being themselves exactly during the game. Del's just cheating and trying to get more money. Ronnie's just, you know, trying to play everything straight and just get the right things coming in and fighting for his life. And Grandad's whole monologue about this is brilliant.
£1,200 for an hotel next to a smelly old waterworks.
What?
All them sewers. I'd rather sleep in the car or look for a bed and breakfast.
No, you don't understand. Bless him. No, look. I've seen the rules.
£1,200 is scandalous. I ain't a tourist, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the few occasions where I feel sorry for Rodney. I mean, what do you do in a situation like this? I think, quite frankly, flipping the table was as good an idea as any.
Yeah, well, I think it's a good point to probably cut Rodney some slack there. I mean, Dale's cheating. Yeah. Grandad essentially is also cheating. He's finally got a little solace with a hotel, and basically there's no point in playing. The game is worth nothing. I like to play to win. You know, not so much that I get angry if I lose, but what's the point in playing if you're not trying at least to win?
You've at least got to have some ground rules set. I mean, the idea of just like, I don't like the look of that hotel, I'm not paying that, or... You've put me in a presidential suite so you can hike the price. I mean, madness.
So Del is picking up some of the pieces and Rodney decides to have a little look out the window, and we get another lightning bolt. And this time Rodney is pretty much nose to nose with this same guy on the other side of the window. And this is a really good bit of physical and vocal acting from Nicholas Lyndhurst. He goes stiff as a board, his arms are out. He turns to Del.
Del, there is a man at the window.
Who what?
There is a man at the window.
And you could just see that, you know, that there's sort of really good, genuine fear portrayed there, and he's just looking really scared. Quite often, David Jason does one-up Nicholas Lyndhurst in this sort of things. When they have this dynamic where they're doing the same thing at the same time, Rodney does something great, and then when Del opens the window, his physical motions, it's like he's dodging bullets, you know, looking left and right, like he's trying to dodge some incoming fire or something. Just, how do you even come up with that as the physical part to opening this curtain? It's, you know, from the acting point of view, it's a crazy thing to do. It's very, very... embellished.
Absolutely, that it's a nice it's like a serve and return, you know. That's often what brings out the best in actors, right? It's just trying to one up each other. But just after that, we then get a knock on the door and the sound of a very authoritative gentleman, and everyone's concerned. They have a little look, and after a couple of failed attempts and nearly smashing the door in his face, they confirm that the guy is not the person that Rodney just saw in the window.
The chief walks in and starts asking questions and taking some descriptions of the guy they've seen at the window, and makes it appear certainly that the person at the window that they're seeing is the guy that they're all looking for, the escaped murderer. And... he believes that he's run away and tells Dale it's safe enough to go out to the Kazi and go to the toilet.
I find this completely mad, is the fact that he says, bear in mind it was literally seconds ago, and he's established it was seconds ago. He's like, oh yeah, he'll be long gone by now. Even if he flat out sprinted from the second he saw him, he could only be half a mile away. And yeah, he's just like, oh yeah, we lost him. Never mind. He doesn't go tell anyone, he doesn't do anything, he's just like, that's unfortunate.
No, completely. In one way, he's telling the truth that the coast is clear, because that guy, he may well be around, but we all know that he's not the ex-murderer.
Yeah.
So it is definitely safer outside than it is in the house at that moment. But he doesn't sell the story very well by being very calm about the fact that the ex-murderer apparently was just at the window, for sure.
But I think what's very good here, as I said about him being like, he looks very authoritative, and he's got, you know, he's got the outfit on, and he looks like a police chief of some, he looks like a man of law of some description, and his voice is very, like, you know, booming and deep, and it, you feel like he plays the part very, very well.
Considering how completely mental he is in the last few minutes, he's really holding down the crazy pretty well right now.
Yeah, definitely.
So Del is just about to go out to the toilet, takes a little hesitation, but then walks out the door, and Rodney runs up to the door, and, I mean, he closes those locks in, you know, a split second. I mean, Nicholas and Hurst must have rehearsed that quite a few times, because I think it's like 3 points that he hits, and it's like bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, I wondered if he was actually locking locks, or if it's almost like he's just touching bits, and they added a sound later, because it was so rapid.
But it was, either way, it was very, very precise, so that was definitely some well-rehearsed motion going on there.
So Dale's gone outside in the pissing rain for a piss, and while he's in the outhouse, that's what I'm looking for. Could I think of the Norwegian word there for a second? That was weird.
What is it?
Utedo.
Utedo.
Yeah, so do is toilet, out, toilet. Anyway, outhouse. Yeah, while he's in the outhouse, a creepy guy comes lurching around the corner, the person who the audience still thinks is the murderer, and then Del suddenly opens the door in a flash and promptly knocks the bloke unconscious. He then does shout to Rodney and Grandad that to come quickly and to bring a rope. Two things here. There is no way on earth they're hearing this. They're surrounded by rain, and there's just no way. And also,
thunder
bring
and lightning.
Rope. I can't find rope in my house, and I've lived here for a couple of years, and I have no idea where I keep the rope. They've just turned up at this cottage, and they're just going to, like, find the rope. Rope's one of those things that people have, but no one knows where it is.
Very good. Next scene is just outside the police station, and Rodney is trying to take all the credit.
Yeah. So then, right, I grabbed the axe out of his hand and I cracked him good and hard on the jaw, so obviously he went down, right? Then I tied him up good and tight and we bundled him in the back of the van.
Well, good work, lad. You say you caught him single-handed?
Yeah. Well, no. There was my brother back at the cottage. He helped a bit.
You're too modest, Rodney.
And just... he's such a git. He's literally, I mean, what kind of lying is this? Oh, yeah, I knocked him out on the jaw. And how can he pretend to be so tough when he's such a wetty?
And the long story of this is at some point that's going to like end up in a paper, or like they say there might be a medal in it. Del's going to find out. Like, he's never getting away with this one.
No, for sure not. And we get the big reveal here for everyone that not only is the guy tied in the back of the van with a gag on, not the murderer, but the gamekeeper who suffers from asthma. But the policeman who is claiming to be Mr. Rogers or whatever he said his name is actually the axe murderer dressed up. Now we have some proper suspense as we realise that Dale is alone in the cottage with the murderer.
Almost time for another dun-dun-dun there. I mean, it's really well played. Obviously, I can't remember what it was like watching this for the first time, but I think this is impossible to really see coming. I think it's been played really well the whole time, and it's a proper, genuine murder mystery or horror thriller twist. Like, it's fantastic.
I think I actually can put myself in that head. I feel like I really remember seeing this for the first time. If I think about the seasons 1 to 3, which I've said is the ones I've seen most of all, if I've seen every episode 20 times, I think I've seen this episode maybe 5 times. I don't know why, but I think I just fast-forwarded through it for whatever reason, or it just wasn't one that I watched repeatedly. And I feel like
really?
I can...
You've only seen this episode 5 times?
No, I mean just equivalently, I've seen it as quarter as much as the other ones.
I was going to say, yeah.
So I kind of feel like I do remember the feeling of thinking that the person at the window was the murderer. But then again, I was very young, so, you know, it wouldn't take much to fool me. I think anyone watching it for the first time wouldn't expect it.
No, definitely not. I think it's perfect. Because you were near the end of the episode anyway, so it totally makes sense that you know, this is now getting to the epilogue, where really we're actually getting to the crescendo, if you like. We're back in the cottage with Del and the chief. Everything seems okay at first, and then the phone goes, and weirdly, the chief lets Del answer it, which is the most bamboozling part of the entire episode. There is no way that even an insane man is insane and stupid enough to let him go answer this phone, which is very likely going to be a warning of what's happened. But whatever, he's clearly highly distracted by his axe.
Yeah, and we get another bit of great acting from Del here, from David Jason, as Del picks up the phone.
Oh, hello, Rodders. Did you get there all right? Yeah. He's what? No. You all right? The chief's just standing there, you know, examining his axe. Yeah, all right, well, you'll hurry back, won't you? All right, goodbye.
David Jason doing a really good sort of like whiny, I don't know how to explain it. It's just brilliant. The way that he takes that call is very, very believable.
Definitely.
This whole scene is just brilliant, really. Del is having to think super quick on his feet in response to this guy's pure insanity.
Yeah, he goes full crazy here, doesn't he? Like, it just suddenly the switch goes, doesn't it?
He turns the crazy up to 11.
Do you like fish?
What?
Do you like fish?
And no matter what this guy is saying or doing, Del's fortunately very quick to be able to either bat it back or buy into the right thing or say the words to make the guy chill out a little bit.
But I saw fishing rods on your van.
No, 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 they didn't belong to me. They belong to my brother and my granddad. I mean, I keep telling them, I beg them not to hurt the poor little fishies. I mean, I only come down here for the fresh air.
And there's a really good joke when they hear a helicopter go over the top and the dude asks if it's the police. And again, this is another thing that I had to look up because Del says that it's Barrett's. Did you know what that is before you checked it out?
Definitely didn't know before I looked it up, no.
Again, this is referring to another 1970s TV commercial, which this is 10, 15 years before this came out, so I'm curious as to how well-known this is. But when he says Barrett's, like, we get a massive laughter from the audience. So clearly everyone in the audience knows what Barrett's is.
I think adverts have such a way of hanging around in the public attention. Like, everyone still knows who the Milky Bar kid is, and there hasn't been a Milky Bar advert in years. Like, there are some things that just everyone remembers adverts. It's weird how that is.
They did quote adverts a few times, like Buzz Me Down the Line was one, wasn't it? That bird, yeah, for BT. Yeah.
We spent a long time on that as well.
I think there was another one that I saw in one of the last few episodes. In the end, I didn't bring it up because, you know, there's always so many old references. We can't bring them all up because we wouldn't talk about the plot. But anyway, for anyone that cared, Barrett's was an old housing estate that used a helicopter that flew in one of their adverts. And they did, like, cheap starter homes. But anyway, it was a very, very good joke.
So we find out the trigger for this psychopath is
don't
fish.
Say trigger. I completely got lost on what you were saying.
Yeah, the switch, his switch that is flipped, yep, is to do with fish.
Do you like fish?
R.I.P. headphones.
You're such a millennial. Some of the fucking things you say. You spend too much time on Twitter.
You know what it means, though, don't you? You've heard it.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
I'm ashamed. But Del weasels his way out of that one. And somehow, you know, even though I've just watched it, I still can't quite figure out how it comes to it. But somehow they end up coming to the idea of playing a game of snooker.
Yeah, it's just his insane mind, isn't it? Just
There's nothing to not enjoy about this bit. Just the whole concept of them playing fake snooker on a non-existent table with non-existent cues.
That cue bit is one of just the best things ever. When he goes, you know, which cue do you like? I mean, unfortunately, an audible podcast again. There's so much physicality in this show that you just can't get. And when we're talking about it, everyone knows and they can see it good enough in their head, which is kind of the beauty of the whole show, really. We've only got to be able to talk about it and everyone can see exactly what's happening. When Del goes to grab the imaginary cue and he goes to pull it and the murderer's hand just tracks it back and it comes forward and then it comes back again. I mean, writing genius, absolute genius there.
And so well pulled off as well. Like, that's got to be difficult to kind of get that right and to have it look not too slapstick. Because they're still holding the tension. They're walking this line so well throughout this scene of that tent. Like, Del is sharing a small room with an axe murderer who has an axe. Like, this is proper tension, yet they keep it there, and yet they're throwing in all these great jokes. Del never seems to... You never don't think that Del thinks he's in danger. Even if you don't think he's in danger, you always think Del thinks he's in danger.
Mm.
And they just play it so, so well.
I think it's really hard not to laugh at that as the actor doing it. The motion is just... It's a very, very funny motion. So they get their cues, and Mr. Murderer goes on about...
Sorry, what?
Mr. Murderer.
That's what we're calling him, is he?
He doesn't actually say his name, although I did read that in a future... Yeah, in lots of things, that when I look up sort of information for the show, there's like, I don't know, the Bible of Peckham and all this other stuff, and a lot of those later post-series publishings...
They kind of add to the canon, don't
yeah,
they?
And they said that this guy's name was something like Robert Chopper Charleston or whatever, something like that.
Yeah,
But I never take any of this information and put it in because, you know, it just doesn't need a name in order to continue on the podcast.
Yeah, that kind of late post adding canon, I just don't need it. It's not that rich a universe, you know. We're not dealing with like Star Trek or Star Wars or the MCU. I don't need that. That kind of retconning.
No, you know? and you got to wonder, like, where has this come from? I mean, this one I saw was from 2016, which is super late. I mean, John Sullivan's been dead for longer than that. So, I mean, someone else thought of up the name and is just basically creating their own storyline. I don't have time for that.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, a lot of the information comes from this book, which I may or may not read. I haven't decided yet. It's called He Who Dares Wins, which is this apparent autobiography by Del. And that's a thing that's referenced a lot. That was actually written by John Sullivan's kid, Jim Sullivan, I think he was called. He's the same guy who... Did a few other Only Fools and Horses bits, and apparently it was a compilation of information from the episodes and other notes that John Sullivan made. I'm sure it's very fun, but for me, Only Fools and Horses is the TV episodes. That is the canon, and I'm not too interested in, that kind of... Like, it basically feels like fan fiction. Like, you know, I know it's his son, but essentially it's fan fiction.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. So this book was from the Peckham Archives, it was called. And yeah, everything that you said is on point. I just don't feel the need to reference those in this entire podcast, really. This is just one for the show, and everything sort of additional to that is kind of fairly null and void.
Yeah, agreed.
So as always, somehow, somewhere... Del has managed to sniff out an opportunity to make some money out of this. The Mr. Murderer says basically that he hates winning, and you know, people expect things of winners and they get noticed, and you know, he clearly just wants to be in the background.
Quite a philosophical little speech that, actually.
It's not inaccurate. Anything.
No, it's quite astute. It's really clever writing of a character. The idea that would be something that an axe murderer would say. It's very psychopath, but also there's like the hint of bit that everyone understands. It's very clever.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And it all comes to a head when Del decides that basically he can win everything and asks the guy if he wants to play for a tenner a frame, which is brilliant. But my first thought was, has this guy got any money on him at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost certainly has. I mean, he did nick the guy's identity papers, maybe his wallet, so maybe there's a bit of cash in there.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, also 10 quid a frame isn't it a lot? I mean, he was down there to earn 300 quid. Let's say a frame is long, you know? Like, how many the helicopter's above them. How many frames is he going to get through?
Yeah, I guess the good thing is, though, like air guitar, I'm really amazing at it. At air snooker, I would also be really good. I'd be nailing that at 147, so.
Well, that's the only way he's going to make more than like 20, 30 quid is if he's nailing out a few Rocket Ronnies. Like, it's.
I mean, even the 147 with O'Sullivan, you know, you're talking.
Obviously, Googling it. Quickest 147. 5 minutes and 20 seconds.
In a game?
Yeah, in the first round of the 1997 World Championships.
Jesus Christ. Guy's a legend. Fast, isn't
it? You're calling the Rocket for nothing.
But Dale was not the Rocket, so he will probably make, if he's lucky, 10 or 20 quid. But, you know, at least he's made some sort of profit on the way down there. At least he's covered the cost of his fuel. And that's it. That's the close. He's the one who's driving me berserk. Why do only fools and old cities work? La 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 la. So, what were your thoughts on the episode, Bob?
I really enjoyed it, to be fair. I thought there was loads of really good jokes. The whole tense atmosphere of the whole episode was really fun. You know, the acting of the side character, policeman, and the chief were both top-notch. I think it's a wicked episode. I really, really enjoyed it. It's right up there for me.
I think everything... all the ingredients were really well pulled off. Everything was really believable. The reveal and the storyline that, you know, is supposed to go on a bit of a journey, that the misdirection, everything hits. You know, the whole thing is, it is believable. And like always, they've managed to turn, or Sullivan's managed to turn, a pretty eerie, suspensical horror type episode into a hilarious episode. He could just do anything. He's great.
Pretty flawless, to be honest.
It wasn't the funniest episode, and it definitely isn't the best one of the series. But in regards to like a concept, it's a brilliant concept episode done beautifully.
Mm. Yeah, the execution, both on the acting and the directing and camera work and stuff like that, is also just top notch. Even the sound, everything. I just think it's a pretty flawless piece of telly.
Excellent. So we'll look on to next week. So next week we have got Yesterday Never Comes. Do you remember much about this one?
Nothing particularly positive. It's really? Another one of it's another episode with a character you hate, and they can be really hit and miss.
When I looked at it, it's funny. Whenever you look up the episode, you always see the images on Google or whatever, and the first ones are always of Miranda in the episode. And again, it's appalling all over again, isn't it? Just like, yeah. Oh, this bitch face has got to be on my screen for a while.
It's going to be a slog, isn't it?
There's definitely going to be some good laughs in there. I think it is still a really funny episode, so really looking forward to it.
I hope to be pleasantly surprised, but I've definitely loved this one.
Excellent. Well, for this week's music, any thoughts?
Oh, I'm hoping it's something kind of horror thriller like. Halloween theme tune or something.
Ooh,
like that.
Oh, you're so close. That's epic. Oh, yeah? Yeah. Very, very Exorcist? Close to that. Yes, there it is.
Goo, boom. In two.
Amazing. So we've got Mike Oldfield with Tubular Bells.
Is very good.
Yeah.
Is it Only Fools and Horses reference?
I didn't even think of that. Yes, it's in the 94's and Horses episode as well. Oh, brilliant. I love this tune anyway. Our old man introduced us to this when we were very young, about the sort of time we were probably watching Only Fools and Horses. And he had put it on super loud in the car. Epic, epic piece of music. So, nice. A little bit of eerie horror music for you. Mike Oldfield, Tubular Bells. See you next week for Yesterday Never Comes. I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as we did, and thanks as always for joining us.
Thanks very much. See you later. Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook /OnlyFoolsBrothers, or on Twitter, we're at OnlyFoolsBros, or if you want to send us a longer message, you can email us at OnlyFoolsBrothers@gmail.com. Also, really appreciate it if you could give us some sort of rating or review on your podcast app of choice. Thanks very much. Goodbye.